telepathy, and aliens. The narrow mountain path was winding, and there seemed to be no end to it. It went upward through short bushes and around lonely trees. At more than 100 meters height, nature had arranged a picturesque sight on all sides fenced by rocks. There, away from prying eyes, a new meeting with the Keeper of Knowledge took place where a man could get away from the mundane world and fully feel his unity with God and the whole of nature. None of the participants could call it another meeting, because each meeting changed their worldview, sometimes by 180 degrees, and with it, their whole life. The weather had been dry and hot since the beginning of July. The scorching sun by noon heated the ground so hot that even through the shoes, one could feel its hot breath. The plants, rare for the area which had recently given the landscape bright light green and emerald colors, were now withered, where the mighty and compassionate rocks could not protect the greenery from the direct rays of the sky. The grass had already begun to turn yellow, unable to withstand such a powerful temperature. Usually, the place was deserted, and only rare shepherds occasionally drove their few flocks past, or solitary travelers climbed to the mountaintops to enjoy the solitude and pray to the Almighty. Today, however, people in loose, bright orange robes appeared every now and then between the gray rocks and sun-scorched grass. They walked along the narrow path in small groups, one after another, occasionally exchanging greetings and short remarks. They were alert and enthusiastic, anticipating a new meeting with the great teacher. It seemed that the long journey and the exhausting heat did not affect them at all. Their loose clothes protected their skin from the sun rays, and their souls were filled with tranquility and pure joy. These people had once made their choice in favor of development and comprehension of the truth, so the thorny path did not frighten them, but, on the contrary, inspired them, as well as the efforts they were making every minute, invisibly, in their inner work. Every step they took on the path of knowledge gave birth to new questions, with which they sought the only one who had the answers, their master. This thirst for help and support in their spiritual endeavors pulled dozens of men and women to the appointed place by an invisible force. Their eyes showed great enthusiasm that could not be disturbed by such trifles as the long journey, the heat, or the rough uphill climb. From afar, one could feel the energy and the uplifting power that emanated from these people. It was supposed everywhere, in the faintly sparkling air, in every blade of grass in the vast expanse, in the silvery clouds lining the sky to the horizon line. Among them, the great teacher walked with a quick and confident step. His face, illuminated by the knowledge of truth, was calm and complacent. The most impatient ones tried to keep pace with him and asked him questions along the way, which were born based on the spiritual experience they had already received. But the narrow path did not allow them to do so. The playful wind between the mountain peaks carried the words aside, and a long conversation could not occur. The master, however, calmly and loudly answered even those questions which it seemed that he could not hear. Each inquirer was gifted with a stream of the finest energy, which gave him a state of clarity and the ability to perceive even the knowledge that was still inaccessible to the student at his level of consciousness development. At the same time, the master easily read the thoughts and the most hidden motives of the inquirer, answering even unasked questions. It seemed magical, but simultaneously, the disciples felt an inevitable confusion, which usually arises when encountering something seemingly inexplicable. The Keeper of Knowledge had told them about telepathy before. Still, all conversations had been verbal so far, and they had never had the chance to experience the possibilities of thought transmission at a distance. Sensing the thirst of his disciples, the sage moved to the very edge of the path so that at least one person could walk beside him. Taking advantage of this, a man named Alexander, who was walking behind him, quickened his step and quickly caught up with the keeper of knowledge. He was tall and broad-shouldered. Fascinated by the master's understanding of his students, he dared to ask his questions. As he came closer to the master, Alexander managed to bow respectfully with a
"Master, we know that before birth, a person has telepathic abilities. But at birth, at the incarnation, telepathy overlaps. Why does this happen? Why is a person forced to communicate verbally?"
The master looked at the man and smiled broadly. Alexander was silent for a second, and then his hands childishly, like a man who suddenly found something he had been looking for a long time without success. The answer seemed to come to him all by itself. The man voiced his guess.
"Is it to have a false personality, so that it's impossible to know what the other person is thinking? So that this game is maintained? So that we cannot understand the other's thoughts and each has the opportunity to lie?"
Many conjectures arose in his mind, to which he awaited confirmation or refutation. The master spoke calmly and confidently. He had to answer such questions, but his love and patience were as boundless as the blue sky above his head.
"Yes, verbal communication is necessary to keep the game alive,"
he said, and paused for a moment so that Alexander could comprehend what he had said.
"In the subtle plane, everyone communicates telepathically. But during our stay in the earthly world, we get a special experience. The experience of ignorance."
The sage wanted the man to come to an understanding on his own, so he asked him a suggestive question.
"How would we have the experience of ignorance if we had telepathy?"
Having said that, the keeper of knowledge smiled and looked at Alexander carefully. The man's face became more serious. He wrinkled slightly from the tension, but found the answer quickly.
"If everyone knew everything, there would be no ignorance,"
he said uncertainly, expecting the teacher's support. He took up his words and continued his discourse.
"It does not exist in the subtle plane, and therefore we cannot get the experience of ignorance. But earthly life gives us such an opportunity. Together with it, we have an opportunity to pass through such negative factors as unrealistic dreams, sick imagination, suspiciousness, lies, and other negative emotions. And so that we could pass through it, we were deprived of telepathy, which the soul had in the subtle plane."
Alexander lowered his eyes, pondering the sage's words. He began to understand the answer to his question, and slowly repeated what he had just said.
"It turns out that as soon as the soul enters the body, it is deprived of telepathy so that it can gain all this experience, which is impossible in the subtle plane,"
he repeated thoughtfully.
"Of course,"
the keeper confirmed and immediately continued.
"And along with experience, he receives negative emotions, wars, fights, everything that generates ignorance. All this is done on purpose so that a person could experience invaluable experience, suffering, and even the very severity of being in a physical body in the physical world. That is why we have been deprived of telepathy."
Alexander was silent. He needed time to comprehend the new knowledge. Immersed in his thoughts, he began to lag behind the sage. Behind them walked a short girl with stern features named Anna. She listened attentively to the conversation, but only now she dared to come closer and ask him personally.
"Great teacher, I still don't understand why we can't communicate telepathically on Earth."
She began hesitantly, hardly choosing the right words and pausing.
"It turns out that telepathy, which exists for us in the subtle plane, is the understanding of the truth. But in our heads now, in earthly life, there is often such a mess in our heads that even if we know each other's thoughts, we will see the same ignorance, as in the dialogue with ourselves."
Anna was silent, trying to overcome her excitement and formulate her question correctly. Then she continued more confidently.
And even if I can recognize another person's thoughts, there will be nothing but ignorance in them. There is still no understanding, no truth in them.
Saying these words, the girl looked only down, afraid to look up. Anna was sure that the Keeper of Knowledge did not understand her. Only when she had finished her question did she dare to look in her master's direction. At that moment, her heart felt lighter. Finding in the sage's gaze understanding and involvement, the girl cheered up. A thin ray of pure energy went into her soul. She revived and believed in herself, in her strength. The master could feel the change in her perfectly. A smile of acceptance and understanding spread across his face. He began to speak in a measured, warm voice, trying to explain everything as clearly as possible.
If telepathy is well developed, as on the subtle plane, it opens many possibilities,
he began.
And with its help, we can read the thoughts not only of those madmen whose heads there is absolutely no truth. We can understand what the rulers think and how they try to deceive us and make us look foolish and crazy. But at the same time, we can also tune in to the great wise men and understand what they are thinking.
So people have different proportions between ignorance and understanding of the truth?
Anna asked. She had not expected to hear such an answer from the sage, so she was extremely surprised.
If telepathy is poorly developed, it can do no harm. In this case, it is more like a magic trick. A person can guess a card or a word, maybe the colors in a picture.
Such weak telepathic abilities can't change anything? Is that why they sometimes appear in people?
Anna asked, looking into her master's eyes with interest.
Of course.
The Keeper of Knowledge confirmed her words.
Often these abilities appear in people who have experienced serious shocks. For example, a brick fell on their head, or lightning struck them. As a result, telepathy was partially unblocked. Such abilities will not cause harm and can even be useful. People with weak telepathic abilities can foresee an accident or dissuade someone from doing something that could end badly. But they can't bring about major changes.
This conversation was becoming more and more encouraging for the girl. Images of people with different telepathic abilities were rapidly changing in her mind. Having imagined a telepath who could read a person's thoughts and feelings thoroughly, Anna asked,
"And if an earthly person could have such power of telepathy as we have in the subtle plane, if we could tune into others and immediately see their past and future?"
"That is quite another matter,"
said the wise man affirmatively.
"Then ignorance would immediately disappear from our lives. That is what our physical world was created for, so that we could have a unique experience that is not possible in the subtle plane."
"It turns out..."
Anna started uncertainly, trying to comprehend the words said by the master.
"The physical plane was created just for us to gain the experience of suffering, ignorance, and delusion, so that the soul could have this experience."
"Telepathy already exists in the subtle plane, and if it appears in the physical world, the very meaning of earthly life will be lost."
Summarized the master. He was pleased that Anna was able to come to reasonable conclusions by herself, and he gifted her with a warm ray of energy, which added strength and vitality to the girl.
"The meaning of all earthly life is to gain experience,"
she said excitedly, "discovering a new truth."
"That is why we go through our life's journey. Instead of fluttering in thin bodies, we, in heavy meat bodies, have to move around like at the bottom of the ocean in some kind of spacesuit, where it is dark and nothing can be seen at arm's length. But that's why we have to live in harsh conditions. Here we get such a unique experience, which is impossible in any subtle plane."
The Keeper of Knowledge looked at the girl and smiled. Anna's eyes filled with tears at the unexpectedly revealed truth, and her face expressed delight. Completely immersed in the conversation, she did not even notice how the Keeper of Knowledge, stepping out on a freer space from the rocks, slowed down the speed of movement, and people began to come closer to them, listening attentively to every word. And now, more than 10 people have surrounded them in a tight ring. The people did not even notice that they were no longer walking along the path, but were making their way through the small bushes and slightly withered grass, so absorbed were they in the conversation. An elderly lady interrupted the silence with a broad hat on her head, which harmonized surprisingly with her long orange robes. Tiana had only recently come to the realization of the truth, and many things seemed incomprehensible to her, but her desire to get to the bottom of things and her great love for the great teacher allowed her to move quickly on the path to knowledge. She was walking a little ahead and to the right of the sage. To ask her question, she turned around and, without slowing down, spoke quickly, as if afraid of losing the formed thought.
Teacher, if we are given a verbal language instead of telepathy, where does this language come from? After all, it is a thought which is put into words. In this case, where does the thought come from?
Thought exists without words,
the sage answered her calmly.
All our senses create certain images. We see, hear, smell. And this image, born in our consciousness, a man who did not yet have words, tried to show to others with the help of sounds and gestures. So, for example, an ancient hunter came to the tribe and showed how his hunting was going. And he did not tell because he did not have a speech yet. But he showed.
The sage tried to portray with gestures the behavior of the ancient hunter.
Here he sneaks, hides behind a bush, takes aim, throws his lance at the beast, hits it or doesn't hit it, drags it.
In response to such a colorful pantomime, all the listeners smiled and continued to listen to the wise man with even more interest. The teacher straightened up and continued his story, gesticulating artistically.
They often just showed their tribesmen what they were doing in a small theater.
The wise man continued.
They did not tell, but showed, because their language was poorly developed. But with time, many words appeared, and it became much easier for people to describe everything with words and to show less with pantomime.
Tiana listened attentively to the sage's answer, and a new question was born in her mind. When the great master was silent, she asked softly,
Master, I realized I can use mime to explain simple information to anyone in any country. That's basically what we do when we don't know a foreign language. And people understand. And they feel the emotion. So you can explain a lot of things without words. So in fact, to be happy and communicate with others, it is not necessary to use verbal speech at all. But to understand, we still use words. We reflect. We think with words. Or we think with images. And in our inner dialogue, we do not always understand where images are in front of us and where words are. Why do we use our speech so actively if we can do without it?
Words are needed to communicate.
The teacher started from the very essence.
We have an image in our mind. We can show it in mime or explain it in words. And often, it is much more convenient to explain something with the help of speech. There are a lot of words, so we can convey information much faster and more accurately. That's why we use words.
But behind every word, there is an image of some object, phenomenon, or action.
Tiana said, a little embarrassed.
Of course, there is an image from the beginning, and words only describe it.
The keeper continued with the same intonation.
But the trouble is that each word can be understood differently. For example, we say the word love, and everyone understands the word love differently. One thinks that love is sex. Another thinks that love is like candy. and another thinks that love is to beat someone's head against the desk. And everyone puts into the word his own image, his own meaning. That's why sometimes people can't understand each other. They use the same word, but everyone puts his own meaning into it.
Can I give you more examples?
A tall, skinny guy, who was walking a little ahead of the keeper, responded. The master smiled at him and nodded.
A selfish person will think that love is the love of self. A person of faith takes love as a religious feeling, as a willingness to serve others.
That's why there is confusion,
continued the wise man.
Because everyone puts a different meaning into the word, a different image. And people do not understand each other because they mean completely different things. Or on the contrary, they say different words, but understand the same thing under them, and start arguing which word is more correct.
And if there was telepathy, then everyone would understand what the other person wants to say?
Clarified the guy.
Yes, and it doesn't even matter if people speak different languages. Telepathically, everything is still perceived the way a person understands, and there is no confusion, because there is understanding not only of what a person says, but also of what he wants to say. And without telepathy, we get confused by words.
That is why we should always clarify what a person means by this word.
Tiana returned to the conversation.
Yes, this is the only way to understand each other. And only by understanding what a person means by this or that word can we understand each other and convey what we want to say to the listener.
Master, naturally, it is more convenient for us to communicate with each other using words.
A man in his 40s joined the conversation. He was walking two steps behind the guardian on the path, so the sage could not see him. But it was not necessary, because he could feel all his feelings and emotions without it. The man spoke loudly and emotionally. His breathing was ragged because of his fast walking and the excitement that engulfed him.
But in my inner dialogue, when I'm not communicating with anyone,
he continued,
I'm also using words. I don't need to use word forms, but I use them anyway. And if I could operate only with images in conversation with myself, how would understanding come to me?
Having listened carefully to the question, the keeper of knowledge answered simply, trying to choose the most accessible comparisons.
Look, animals or primitive people, they think in images. And with every feeling they experience, they have a certain image.
The sage began in a calm voice, pausing for a better understanding.
For example, a dog remembers smells, and each smell is associated with a certain image. A person, another dog, a cat. It smells an odor, and in its head immediately, the image of the person to whom this odor belongs is born. So animals think in images, but man from the very birth gets used to human speech, to the language spoken by people around him. He also thinks in images, but verbal speech is so tightly seated in his consciousness that he even begins to build his inner monologues out of words.
Just because he's used to it,
the man clarified.
Exactly.
The master said affirmatively and smiled, illuminating everyone with a beam of pure energy.
Everything that he used to say in words, he started to think in words too.
A tall, skinny guy with glasses and slightly disheveled hair joined the conversation. He could have walked much faster, but he was constantly restraining himself so as not to miss a single word of the conversation.
Master, in programming, there is such a thing as coding. That is, you type in a certain numerical code and a picture appears on the screen. That's what they explained to us at school in computer science classes.
He began from afar.
It turns out that the same encoding takes place in our head. You imagine an image, and it is encoded into words, and the words are decoded into an image.
The sage looked approvingly at the young man who had managed to find such a precise example of how thinking works.
That's a very correct comparison,
said the guardian of knowledge.
Indeed, during our thinking process, there is such internal programming, which we often call a program in our head.
So,
continued the young man, thoughtfully and seriously,
if such coding takes place in our head, then we must know the code to every concept, to every phenomenon. And when communicating with another person, it is necessary to choose such words that would cause the right associations, i.e., would create the right pictures in his head.
And in fact, each person has his own language, his own programming. And even speaking the same language, everyone can understand what they hear in their own way. It depends on upbringing, education, experienced emotions, and in general, on personal qualities of each person.
Then how can we explain to other people about God, love, and faith if these words give rise to completely different images in everyone's head?
A short woman in her 50s, walking a little behind the teacher, intervened. Her face expressed sincere bewilderment.
That's why we need to know what each person means by key terms, such as love, person, world, life. When we can understand what he means by each word, then we will be able to choose the right wording to convey exactly what we want to convey.
The sage paused for a moment and turned to the woman who had asked the question. Then he continued.
Actually, it is quite difficult. If we choose the words wrongly, then a completely different image will appear in the interlocutor's mind.
The sage squinted his eyes and smiled.
You will tell him about love for God and people, but he will think that it is about sex and repentance for his sins.
Having given themselves up to an interesting conversation and listening attentively to the keeper of knowledge, the people did not even notice how they had traveled several kilometers and had almost arrived at the place where everything was prepared for the conversation. A small level ground covered with soft grass was surrounded by rocks on all sides, and only a small, narrow path led the travelers to this cozy place where a person could hide from prying eyes and fully feel his unity with God and nature. The winds that so often blow across mountain peaks did not penetrate here, but the air was full of mountain freshness that gave people strength and vigor. Meetings had been held here before, so every inch of space was imbued with a special energy that literally flowed in the air. When everyone arrived, the sun was already setting, illuminating everything around them with a pinkish-red glow. Having built a small fire, people sat around it so that everyone could see the keeper of knowledge. He sat down on a wide stone about a meter high, covered by his caring assistants with a generous bunch of fragrant herbs. Each of the students was eager to hear the wise speeches of the great teacher, so all the preparations were very fast. Now everyone was quiet, waiting for the beginning of the talk. By tradition, the talk began with the recitation of a prayer. The keeper of knowledge spoke firmly and confidently. The words sounded loud and clear, penetrating the hearts of the students. The sounds did not go into the void, but echoed back, reflecting off the surrounding rocks. This gave birth to an even greater sense of solemnity of the moment and some unique joy, which cannot be felt in our ordinary everyday life. The disciples whispered the familiar words of the prayer after the master, passing them through their whole being. Their minds and hearts were open to the comprehension of new knowledge, and their eyes shone with gratitude and thirst for knowledge. The sacred prayer was changing their consciousness, preparing them to realize the truth. Those students who walked beside the sage were still concerned about the topic of telepathy, which they had discussed on their way to the chosen place. The master understood this and was ready to fully satisfy their thirst. Perhaps that was why, when several of the disciples raised their hands, he allowed the lady in the wide-brimmed hat, who had participated in the conversation along the way, to be the first to ask her question. Seeing the inviting gesture from the master, the lady perked up slightly and began to hurriedly state her question, a little worried and stammering. Apparently, she was a little embarrassed by the need to speak in front of so many listeners, but the urge to get an answer to her question was much stronger.
"Master, tell me,"
the woman began,
"why is it that when we try to convey something very emotional in words, we start gesticulating profusely? Sometimes we get a whole pantomime. Why do we do that?"
"Because at this moment, the motor center also joins our thinking activity,"
the great teacher began to explain at once.
"Because the motor center also expresses itself."
The master paused for a second, choosing the right words.
"We express emotions in different ways, through the timbre of voice, intonation, speed, and volume of speech. And also through nonverbal means of communication, gestures, facial expressions. If the sexual center is switched on, and it can also take part in expressing emotions, a person will speak breathlessly, with special intonations."
"That is, each center in its own way seeks to convey information?"
"Yes,"
answered the master affirmatively.
"Each center participates in the conversation and tries to transmit the same information in its own way."
"Does it happen that through nonverbal communication, a person conveys much more information than verbally?"
the woman asked. She looked at me with a look of understanding based on her many experiences.
"Of course,"
replied the sage.
"Often we say much more with our gestures, emotions, looks than with words. Especially when we try to hide something from the interlocutor, not to express our feelings or attitudes, but nonverbal means of communication give away what we are trying to hide."
"But you say that it is much easier to convey information with words. Why do we use nonverbal communication so much?"
"Information can be very different,"
the keeper began his answer leisurely.
"Our attitude to a person or a phenomenon. This is obvious information. It can be conveyed without the help of words. But there are more complex things. Where and what to buy, what to do. It is even more complicated when we operate with abstract concepts, scientific terminology. In these cases, emotions and gestures are absolutely powerless. For this purpose, we need words, which, in fact, are specially created for this purpose."
"It turns out that it is better to express our emotions and attitudes with intonation, gestures, and facial expressions, and other information with words."
The woman's face was tense and focused. She was pondering every word she said, trying to formulate the question precisely and understand the essence of what was said.
"Yes, that's right,"
replied the master confidently.
"Abstract information must be conveyed in words. We simply cannot convey it fully with the help of nonverbalism. But the concrete level of communication is better to convey to a person using intonation, gestures, and facial expressions, rather than words."
The hand was raised by a man of medium height named Max. He was sitting a little aside so that the shadow from the rock almost covered him. It was getting dark outside and it was hard to see his face. With a nod of his head, the teacher invited him to speak and he began.
"Master, do I understand correctly that if a person has more developed perception by feeling, such as intuition and telepathy, he speaks less? And those people who have less developed feelings of the world and perception of another person, they talk more, trying to compensate for their lack of information through words, to understand this world."
Max spoke calmly and thoughtfully, choosing his words carefully. The keeper of knowledge listened to him attentively, smiled, and quickly began his answer.
"There are simply different types of people among people,"
he began.
"Some of them are Mercury types. They talk a lot, for business, not for business, or just talk, babble something."
The master stopped for a second, smiled, and lowered his eyes, as if he remembered something funny. and immediately continued.
Others belong to Saturn. They can say two or three words and then stop talking. People have different ways of speaking. Someone talks a lot, adds a lot of empty information, absolutely unnecessary. And another person speaks only in essence. He says two or three words, and that is all. And that is enough for understanding. That's why different types of people use speech in different ways.
Max listened attentively to the teacher's answer, thought for a couple of seconds, and spoke a little louder and faster.
Master, but according to Osho's teachings, a lot of energy goes out through our words.
Max began his question.
Remember, you even practice silence with us, your students. And after a week's silence, everyone accumulated a lot of energy. But in everyday life, I cannot keep silent for a long time. I have to say something all the time. That is why it is impossible to accumulate energy. How can we do it?
As he said this, Max straightened his back and leaned forward slightly so that he could see his master better. His whole posture expressed extreme interest. Meanwhile, the teacher looked at the rest of the listeners. They all sat very quietly, gazing intently into the master's face, and waited impatiently for his answer.
The main thing is not to say too much,
said the master judiciously.
There is a story on this subject. Once Ouspensky asked Gurdjieff whether it was good to practice silence. Gurdjieff answered him in the following way. To practice real silence, one must go to a monastery, be in a cell.
And in fact, in ordinary daily life, you constantly need to be in contact with other people, at work, in the family, in public places. That is why it is impossible to practice silence without damaging other things.
The man picked up the master's thought.
What should we do then?
The student's eyes, like the rest of the audience, read a question mark. The teacher answered calmly and unhurriedly, smiling slightly at such an obvious question.
Say only what is necessary, but do not say too much,
he replied.
Often you say a lot of unnecessary things that could have been left unsaid, and this is wasted energy. And if you limit your words to a minimum, the energy will accumulate in you. And then it will also be a form of keeping silent.
After this answer, all the students were quiet for a moment and plunged into reflection. Each of them thought about how they could shorten their questions so as not to expend unnecessary energy. And most importantly, not to abuse the attention of the great keeper of knowledge. The first to break the silence was a short, thin, middle-aged woman named Kelly. She was sitting close to the fire, and the shadows from the fire flickered on her face, illuminating it with a soft glow. Her lively eyes and charming smile made her look like a fairy. She gently raised her hand, signaling that she wanted to speak. The master immediately noticed this and nodded in her direction. The woman began.
Master, I'm very interested in the subject of telepathy,
Kelly said with a slight note of anxiety in her voice. She knew that the great teacher was ready to give an answer to any questions, but the social stereotypes that it was better not to talk about this and similar topics did not give her any peace.
Do I understand correctly that for modern man, telepathy is more of an atrophied sense, but we can still work it up? Earlier, you said that this state is manifested in us through sensing God.
Hearing the question, the keeper rubbed his palms together in satisfaction, satisfied that the student had memorized such a subtle facet of knowledge.
Telepathy is preserved at our emotional center,
confirmed the master.
But man is not used to listening to emotions because he hears only his thoughts, so he silences his emotions and intuition. After all, intuition is our emotional center. It tells him one thing, but the brain decides differently. And when making decisions, people are accustomed to rely on logic, advice from others, or their life experience, but not on what the emotional center tells it.
May I give an example of your words?
One of the listeners sitting in the second row turned to the sage.
Sometimes we think that if a person says polite words, he is a good person. That's what our mother told us as children. And even if our intuition tells us that this person is a scoundrel and we should run away from him, we don't listen to it. And I have an example,
said the young boy.
There used to be a stereotype that if a man drove a fancy car, he was a thug. Times have changed long ago, but this opinion is still stuck in the heads of many people because that's what their parents said. That's what they used to think. And even if the emotional center likes the owner of an expensive car very much, a woman, for example, will still not approach him because mom said it could only be a scoundrel. And she will think that her emotions and intuition deceive her.
You have chosen very appropriate examples.
The sage supported his students.
The mind constantly interrupts the feelings that we have emotionally. That is why we do not listen to our emotions. And in fact, they could tell us a lot, because the first impression does not deceive us. This happens because the emotional center is the first to evaluate the situation, and it does it very quickly. And the intellectual center always lags behind, because it starts to remember the advice of others, to go over different situations in its head, to build logical chains. All this takes time. But drowning out the voice of intuition, we make a conclusion only by the intellectual center, and often by its mechanical part, A.D., by memory. And so as a rule, we label everything and everyone.
Labels are what we have been told about a person or a phenomenon before?
Kelly clarified.
Exactly.
The sage said affirmatively.
These labels were given to us by our upbringing. When we were brought up, we were given a lot of labels. So instead of really knowing a phenomenon or recognizing a person, we just put a label on it and look at everything through it like a prism.
That's why we can't understand what kind of person is in front of us. What kind of phenomenon is this? We put labels on them and calm down. And except for our stereotypes, we can't notice anything.
Kelly was extremely interested. She spoke quickly and impatiently, kept rubbing the waistband of her dress. The master looked at her approvingly and continued.
Therefore, we should listen to emotions, not to the mind, which is filled with templates.
He admonished.
Then emotions can tell us a lot, because telepathy is not yet completely silenced in them. The same applies to instincts, to which people listen even less. But they also have telepathic abilities.
It's just a pity that people are not used to listening to them, to their intuition and emotions,
said Kelly with sadness in her voice.
Yes, this is indeed true,
confirmed the keeper.
So we are used to listening only to the mind. And our mind is full of garbage, different labels, templates. And he just picks up everything suitable stereotype and pastes it on the phenomenon, on the person. And then we see only this template. But it does not see the real person or phenomenon.
An elderly man sitting not far from the master raised his hand. The sage gestured with his hand to allow him to speak. Asking his question, he hunched slightly, but he spoke confidently and expressively enough.
Master, is telepathy on the intellectual or on the emotional center?
The student was silent for a second, trying to formulate his thoughts more clearly.
Or can it be in different centers? And what does it depend on? On the purity of energy, on the purity of thoughts, or on something else?
Telepathy is just an ability of the soul.
The keeper of knowledge began to say with a slight smile.
In the subtle plane, the soul communicates telepathically. This communication resembles radio waves. Our intellectual center sends a radio wave. Emotional center sends a radio wave. And the other intellectual and emotional center can pick up on this wave and receive it. So others understand what we think, what we say, or what we feel, what emotions we are experiencing at that moment.
But when we are placed in a physical body, all this is dulled. We can hardly grasp what another person feels. We have to tune into it,
the man said, thinking.
Yes,
the sage continued.
The emotional center is less blocked. Thanks to it, We can still recognize the feelings and emotions of other people. But the intellectual center is more blocked, so it is more difficult to perceive other people's thoughts. These abilities are blocked for us in our earthly life. That is why we are pleased to be in ignorance, receiving this experience of misunderstanding, suffering, and lies, which we need so much while passing through the earthly path.
But telepathic abilities can still be observed among people, even at the most primitive level.
Kelly again intervened in the conversation. Her curious gaze constantly ran from the sage to the other listeners, at the same time she told with interest, trying to choose understandable comparison.
There are such experiments when, for example, a person goes into another room and everyone mentally visualizes an orange. And he, being behind the wall, reads this image. It turns out that there is almost no emotion here, just a specific object. But the person is actually guessing.
Some listeners nodded as if they had heard about this experiment before.
How does telepathy work in this case?
Kelly continued.
If telepathy is still an emotion, it turns out that they so emotionally represent the orange. Think about how tasty and sweet it is. Is that emotion being transmitted to the person behind the wall? What is the nature of this effect?
The keeper of knowledge lowered his eyes to the burning logs and softly began his answer.
No telepathy as such is still present in earthly life,
he said.
It's just that our minds are so cluttered with thoughts that we are not able to tune in to another person and read their thoughts. But the mechanism of action of telepathy is somewhat different. For example, if a schoolboy wants to present himself in front of others as a great telepath, he suggests to others to guess a certain number so that he could solve it. And at this moment, he himself vividly and emotionally represents this figure. For example, a D in his diary. At this moment, the interlocutor is thinking, there is no pre-prepared template in his head, which means that his mind is open for perception, and he can easily catch the emotional message of a telepath. Unnoticeable for himself, he catches this simple figure.
And as a result, the telepath guesses that the interlocutor has been double-riddled, but only because he himself made it in advance?
Asked a short girl from the first row.
Exactly.
The master replied affirmatively.
Of course, this only works with the simplest information. With more complex information, it will be much more complicated. A person cannot stay open, even for a few seconds. We are so organized that thoughts constantly fill our mind. A person will immediately start to get distracted, to think about something, and concentration is lost. He won't be able to grasp more complex information.
It was getting dark. The clear sky shimmered with the twinkling of millions of stars, which beckoned and caused delight. At such moments, one feels unity with nature, especially keenly. Looking at the night sky, covered with countless luminous dots, which, like our sun, shelter themselves around themselves invisible to us planets, you begin to clearly realize that somewhere out there, beyond our reach, there are necessarily intelligent civilizations. Mankind cannot be alone in the infinite universe. This is obvious, even if scientists have not yet received irrefutable evidence of the existence of another mind. The dim light of the burning fire illuminated the faces of the people beside him with a soft glow. Each of them was thinking about eternal things, about God and the universe, about the cosmos and other civilizations. Therefore, the conversation with the keeper of knowledge turned to another eternal topic. Stephen asked the first question about alien intelligence. He was a stocky, middle-aged man, sitting to the right of the master. He began his question in a somewhat uncertain voice, but when he saw the favorable look of the sage, full of warmth and understanding, he cheered up and spoke more confidently.
"Great Master,"
he began,
"I am worried about one question. Why do aliens not communicate with the Earthlings and have not yet made open contact with us? After all, observatories were built before there were pyramids. All this gives the possibility of communication between civilizations. The aliens don't want to contact us, or even we, your students, do not have enough skill to communicate with aliens."
The master looked at Stephen with interest. Feeling his excitement, the keeper gifted his student with a stream of pure energy, which gave him strength and encouraged him to receive new knowledge. The answer to the question was found at once.
"Aliens do not need to communicate with us directly,"
began the great teacher calmly and judiciously.
"They already know everything about us. Who thinks what? They read people's thoughts telepathically. And if they need to transmit certain information, they simply send a thought into the head of a particular person. He takes this thought as his own and declares to everyone that he invented it himself."
"So they don't have to communicate through direct contact? They can do all this telepathically?"
Stephen clarified to the master.
"Their technology and development have already reached such a level that there is no need for direct contact. Therefore, when the need arises, the aliens communicate with us telepathically."
A very young boy named Wayne, who was sitting some distance away from the Keeper of Knowledge, entered the conversation. He had recently decided to join the ranks of the Great One's disciples. So much of the conversation was incomprehensible to him. But the conversation about extraterrestrial intelligence interested Wayne very much, and he dared to ask his question.
"Master, do I understand correctly that the level of development of aliens is very high relative to the level of development of humans?"
he rambled.
"And it is the same as if ants have claims to humans, why they do not communicate with them. Humans are not able to communicate with ants, with a cockroach, with a tarantula, but they don't feel the need to. It's the same with aliens. They don't care what we do here, how we live."
"Yes, your remarks are correct,"
the master assured him and looked at the boy paternally.
"They are watching, studying us as we watch the anthill. They watch what processes take place on the Earth. They study how our history develops, how the technological process and the psychology of people changes. Aliens are watching everything that happens in our lives."
"Why don't they show themselves to us?"
Wayne asked impatiently.
"If they start communicating with us, the scientific experiment they are conducting will be disrupted,"
the master answered him. The students had not expected such an answer at all, and their eyes widened in surprise.
"And it will be disrupted,"
continued the master,
"because humans will be directly influenced by an extraterrestrial civilization that is far superior to us in its development. And that means that the purity of the experiment will be lost. That is why they do not communicate with us in the usual way. But if they need to, they can always find out what each of us is thinking, and they can transmit a thought if they need to. But in this way, they study on us how historical, psychological, and other processes in the forming society proceed."
"Master, we were told from childhood that there are signs of UFOs,"
Anthony continued his reasoning.
"When scorched circles are found on the fields, they say that aliens left them. Other civilizations make them on purpose to shift the human assemblage point? Or do these circles remain accidentally as remnants of their travels?"
"No, the aliens leave these signs on purpose,"
the keeper assured Anthony.
"This is how they study people's reactions to things that cannot be explained with logic and knowledge. After the appearance of a strange sign on the field, scientists begin to argue whether it is possible or not. And if a person can't determine it with the help of his science, then it means that it can't be possible, and someone faked it on purpose. And some people believe the scientists, and some people believe their own eyes. These are the different reactions that alien civilization studies."
Anna, who was talking to the teacher on the way to the appointed place, voiced the next question. She gently raised her hand, slightly, questioning its appropriateness. The master gave her permission to speak.
"Master, tell me,"
Anna began in a very hesitant voice.
"Who are the aliens in the general hierarchy relative to the Earth? We know from the teachings that there are humans, angels, archangels. You told us about this hierarchy. And if aliens, in fact, do not care about us, if they fly in and out to us by chance, how do they treat us? And can they help or harm us in any way?"
"Aliens are just a more technologically advanced civilization. Nothing more,"
the master began.
"It's like comparing us and cavemen. We have better education, higher technical progress. But if you compare modern man and cavemen on a spiritual level, the difference is quite insignificant."
"I have read that Uspensky talked to Gurdjieff on this subject,"
Anna said.
"Uspensky argued that there was a great difference between an uneducated savage and a civilized educated man. To which Gurdjieff replied, 'Look, there is a war going on now. What is the difference between a savage and a civilized man? All are equally in this meat grinder, killing each other. Is there any difference between them?'"
"So it is,"
the Keeper of Knowledge picked up.
"Aliens are just some technically more advanced civilization. But that doesn't mean it's more spiritual. More informed and educated, maybe. But spirituality depends on how we know ourselves and how we change ourselves."
"But is it possible to know oneself, much less to change?"
Anna wondered.
"Of course,"
replied the master, confidently.
"It is possible to cognize oneself. For example, a shaman in a wild tribe, he can cognize himself, improve himself. And a civilized person, on the contrary, is not engaged in development and strives for general education. Therefore, spiritual development does not depend on the level of civilization, but depends on our efforts that we make to become better."
A young guy named Wayne came back to the conversation. He was eager to learn as much as possible about extraterrestrial life, and questions were bubbling in his head. Having caught a free second, he raised his hand high, again, showing with all his appearance an unrestrained craving for new knowledge. The child's intemperance and emotionality caused slight smiles on the faces of others, and everyone turned their attention towards the boy.
"Master, can we find out how alien civilizations work?"
Wayne spoke quickly, unable to contain his own emotions.
"There is intelligent life in the solar system, and it is man. But what about other systems and metagalaxies? Each of them is inhabited by its own special intelligent civilization, which are at a different level of development, have their own peculiarities, and their own hierarchy? Or are the aliens one civilization that is much more advanced than we are?"
It seems that most of the listeners already knew the answers to the questions that Wayne was asking, but nevertheless, everyone listened to the Keeper's answers with interest, trying to draw new knowledge from them.
"The whole universe is inhabited by intelligent beings. They are present on almost all planets, suitable for the development of life."
The wise man calmly began his answer.
"But all of them are at different levels. Someone only from beasts passes into a state similar to humans. And someone's civilization has been developing for millions of years and has reached a high level of development."
"So, there are a lot of civilizations, but they are all at different levels?"
Wayne clarified.
"On some planet, there is a very high level of development. And on another planet, life is just beginning to develop."
"That's why there are such aliens who have reached a high level of technical development,"
continued his explanations.
"They already have the ability to fly around the galaxies to see what is happening where, and where the development is just beginning. And those civilizations that are still in their infancy, of course, can't fly anywhere. They are still running to the watering hole with clubs."
So, those aliens who are watching our planet, are they just one of many other intelligent beings living in our universe?
Said the boy with astonishment. His imagination at that moment was creating many of the most amazing beings capable of having intelligence.
That is why civilizations on the planets are at different levels of development,
answered the keeper.
Some on a high technical level, some on a low level, some on a high spiritual level, some on a low spiritual level. And each civilization has its own peculiarities and distinctive features.
An elderly woman named Maria joined the conversation. In spite of her age, she looked beautiful. The fascinating conversation and the general energy permeating the place gave her strength, and she was not at all tired either by the long mountain road or by the meeting, which had already dragged on past midnight.
I would like to ask,
she began,
are the stages of life and death, as a human being, the same for all civilizations? We spend our whole life preparing for death, for transition to the subtle plane, reconsciousness, and maybe even reincarnation. Does the same sequence apply in the case of aliens? Do they also have death, the subtle plane, some kind of rebirth, revision, or do they go through other stages?
The question was not a simple one concerning the very basics of being. But the teacher knew the answer to it. He looked at the woman carefully and tried to give her the most detailed answer.
Life and death. These two stages are the same for absolutely all civilizations, because they are the basis of being.
The keeper answered with full seriousness.
Cavemen and modern people have them, and even other planets have the same processes. And everyone in this world gets his life experience.
But every planet has completely different conditions in life, and the very appearance of aliens may have nothing in common with the Earth?
Maria wondered.
The very different conditions in different parts of the universe are created so that the soul can have a variety of experiences. That is why there are many planets where life goes on in different ways. Somewhere there are intelligent insects. Somewhere green men live, intelligent lizards, etc. And the soul incarnates in these different conditions and gets different experiences, which it lacks to make it wise.
These words aroused everyone's surprise and made the students think. Maria lowered her eyes down and inarticulately said,
I used to think that there are only two ways after death, to the angels or back to earthly life. And it turns out that, in fact, there are many more variations of our reincarnation. And each of us can be born on some planet or civilization, depending on how God says and on what experience the soul needs. Right?
There are many variations in the forms of existence, but there is a huge difference in the level of spiritual development between an angel and someone who incarnated from bedbugs.
The keeper replied confidently.
That is, you can incarnate among very advanced aliens, but be at a low level of development.
He continued.
One can be a considerate and cautious egoist who thinks only about himself and does not realize that it is necessary to develop spiritually. Or you can incarnate among cavemen and be some kind of a shaman who constantly lives for others, does not think about himself and starts to develop spiritually. He communicates with spirits, and they teach him how to live, etc.
It turns out that the level of spiritual development does not depend at all on the level of civilization,
one of the students asked.
Of course.
The master confirmed his guess.
Even a caveman can become an angel immediately after death. And even a man of the most advanced civilization can be reincarnated from a bedbug and see nothing around but himself.
Master, if aliens come down to Earth, do they usually come in the form of avatars, in the form of great teachers,
a dark-haired, middle-aged man named Victor asked. The master smiled. He noted to himself that Victor still had a lot to understand and comprehend in this conversation. But he didn't let on, and patiently began to explain to his students who the aliens really were.
"No, I told you that alien civilizations just have better technical development. After all, we would not come as avatars to the wild tribes because we do not have a sufficient level of spirituality."
The teacher clearly pronounced each word, emphasizing the words wild and spirituality.
"So what if we have a more developed civilization than in some African tribe? But some shaman from this tribe can come to us in the form of avatar, because he communicated with different spirits, with gods, and in this wild tribe he was able to reach a high level. But a man in a technologically advanced civilization can be selfish, a scoundrel, and not as an avatar, but as some demon who will come there and destroy everything."
"So it doesn't depend on technical development, but on the level of spirituality?"
Victor asked quietly.
"Yes,"
the sage answered affirmatively.
"And if the soul has a high level, it is drawn to the knowledge of the truth and starts to develop. And only after reaching high spirituality will it be able to come somewhere as an avatar."
"It turns out that aliens have the same false identities, the same lessons?"
Anna rejoined the conversation. Her face was somewhat saddened by the realization of the imperfection of this world.
"Of course, it all depends on each individual. Whether to strive for spiritual development or to remain egoistic, everyone decides individually. There are spiritually developed civilizations, but they are not necessarily technically developed. Ancient India or Egypt can serve as an example. But in such a society, everyone is engaged in his own development. The society itself is organized in such a way. There are many priests, many spiritual schools, and the role of religion is very strong. And from childhood, a person learns to cognize himself, to develop spiritually."
The master was silent for a moment. Catching the moment, the tall guy with the glasses asked for another example.
"And there are civilizations that are not spiritually developed. Maybe they are technologically advanced, like us, for example, but a war breaks out and their spirituality slips to the point where they are ready to stack nuclear bombs on entire cities. Isn't this proof that a technically advanced society can be made up of complete egoists? Each of them pulls the blanket over themselves and they destroy themselves."
"Yes,"
confirmed the keeper.
"They have reached the technical level, but the spiritual development has remained at a very low level. Such civilizations remain fools who can self-destruct at any moment, throwing bombs at each other."
"It turns out,"
Maria rejoined the conversation,
"if a civilization is rapidly developing technically, its spirituality, on the contrary, is on the back burner."
"Of course, each civilization is unique, and the development of each one is different. However, very often such a switch can indeed be observed. And some civilizations focus on spiritual development, and others on technical development."
The master waved his hands.
"Sometimes these two components go together. As for example, in Egypt or ancient India,"
he continued,
"in our civilization, spirituality first almost completely disappeared, after which intensive scientific and technological progress began. It turns out that a spiritless civilization started scientific and technological progress, so religion went further and further into the background."
"But could we go together for both spiritual development and technical progress?"
Maria asked.
"And it could have been the other way around and suspended technical progress, devoting all our energies to the development of spirituality. We would have been afraid of new discoveries, how harmful their consequences could be. For example, from the invention of the atomic bomb, and we would have decided to stop at the level of development, which would have been at that moment. and would have started to develop spiritually. In this case, we would have consciously abandoned progress in favor of spiritual development. But so far, this has not happened, unfortunately.
The rich conversation so absorbed the attention of the students and the keeper of knowledge that they did not notice that the first pre-morning rays of the rising sun began to peep through the starry sky. The campfire had long since burned out, and a light breeze carried away a thin stream of smoke coming from the fire. The answers of the great teacher, together with his pure energy, radiating love and harmony, gave the listeners new strength to receive new knowledge and to realize the truth. Each of the students wanted to make the most of this unique opportunity to be near the sage, to talk to him, to be energized. Silence settled in the clearing, which was broken only by the chirping of grasshoppers and a faint breeze ruffling the sparse yellow-green grass. Each of the students was thinking about the fate of their civilization and personal spiritual development. Looking at the clear and pure eyes of his students, the Keeper of Knowledge sincerely believed that soon many of them would be able to comprehend the great truth. In the silence created, the strong, vibrating voice of the Master sounded, and every sound of the prayer he uttered was echoed by a thousand echoes. The words of the prayer rose above the rocks and flew upward, breaking into thousands of echoes. It seemed that they could spread to all corners of our planet and even reach the cosmos itself, bringing to every intelligent being the great knowledge and pure energy full of love and acceptance. Spiritual practice. Kata. Developing telepathic abilities. After a spiritual conversation with the sage, the disciples felt an upsurge of sublime emotions. The subtle spiritual energy of the teacher gave them incredible clarity of mind. In such a state, many things that before seemed too difficult to understand were seen amazingly clear and dimensional. The conversation about telepathic abilities and alien life opened before the students a completely different layer of the world, hidden from ordinary people. Since childhood, they were told that aliens and telepathy existed only in fantasy movies, that it was fiction and fairy tales for children. Now, everything is reversed. In fact, many of these simple truths turned out to be cleverly disguised illusions. Reality appeared before the students completely differently, and it was much more exciting and multifaceted than the most daring assumptions of fantasists. It turned out that everything in the world existed, alien civilizations, watching mankind from afar and preferring not to interfere in the development of earthly life, and telepathic abilities, allowing us to transmit thoughts without any additional means of communication for hundreds and thousands of kilometers. The knowledge revealed to the students fascinated and amazed the imagination, encouraged them to tirelessly and incessantly go further, to ask new questions and seek answers to them in an effort to learn the truth. Now the first rays of the sun were already appearing in the sky, and the morning chill had descended on the clearing, hidden from the strong winds by the mountain ledges. But the disciples did not want to sleep at all. Even though they had not slept all night and had spent it in spiritual conversation, they were now filled with energy. Their eyes were shining with the inner light of the insights they had received. So when the sage suggested they do a spiritual practice to develop telepathy, the disciples agreed with great enthusiasm. The time the sage chose was not accidental. At dawn, all spiritual efforts have maximum effect. So he always recommended his disciples to get up at dawn and do spiritual practices. Even the oldest followers of the sage did not feel tired. On the contrary, they felt energized and felt a great need to continue the class, to practice the knowledge they had just received.
Master, can we really learn telepathy right now and read someone's thoughts?
Wayne blurted out with youthful excitement, unable to hide the emotions bubbling inside.
To develop telepathy and other superpowers, you need to practice a lot,
answered the Keeper of Knowledge softly.
It requires a certain level of subtle energy. A person can accumulate this energy in his subtle bodies.
The Great Master, how do you do it?
Asked a short woman, about 50 years old, with brown hair, in which gray strands glistened.
We can accumulate this energy by collecting it with the help of special breathing practices, or pranayamas. Now we will do just such a breathing practice, which will help to accumulate prana and open telepathic abilities.
The disciples listened to the sage's explanations with awe and enthusiasm, catching his every word.
So first we accumulate energy by breathing, and then we try to tune into the person we want to read the thoughts of?
Kelly, a thin, middle-aged woman, asked, raising her lively, sparkling eyes at the sage.
The kata of telepathy development includes three stages.
The master began to explain thoroughly.
First, we clear our own mind from chaotic thoughts. Then we accumulate and concentrate energy in ourselves. And after that, we tune in to the person we want to connect to and from the necessary image.
Master, and why do you need to cleanse your own mind?
Kelly asked, carefully choosing words so that the question was as accurate as possible.
Without it, it will not be possible to perceive the mind of another person?
That's right,
confirmed the Keeper of Knowledge.
In fact, it is not so difficult to perceive other people's thoughts.
He smiled enigmatically.
Only for this, you need to stop your own internal dialogue. And this is a difficult task that requires conscious effort. Imagine that you are trying to tune in to the right radio wave and pick out something, but you are constantly interfered by streams of other information from other frequencies. So it is with our thoughts. A person's inner ether is constantly occupied with dialogue with himself, with imaginary disputes, and this clogs all the energy channels through which we can perceive other people's thoughts. If we free the inner ether, clear it, only then we will be able to perceive what others broadcast, as our energy contact will be free and cleared of extraneous noise.
Teacher, and if we manage to do it, then we will be able to practice telepathy right today?
Wayne asked emotionally. It was obvious that he was more eager than anyone else to start practicing.
You can.
The sage smiled again, looking at the young apprentice.
We will go through the process of developing telepathic abilities. From the first time you can try to perceive or transmit simple images. If you want to develop telepathy on a good level, you should practice this kata regularly, and then you will be able to do it better and better.
The Keeper of Knowledge looked around his students with an attentive gaze, assessing their readiness for what was to come. The faces of his followers looked focused and spiritualized and excited. It was evident that the expected spiritual experience was awe-inspiring, arousing their emotions and their desire to touch the sacred knowledge.
If everyone is ready, we can begin,
said the sage, exposing his face to the bright rays of the dawn sun.
The first stage is a special cleansing breath. We will clear our mind of chaotic, disordered thoughts. Breathing should be fast, rhythmic, sharp, and without pauses.
The Great Master, how long will it take to breathe like this?
Alexander asked.
The longer, the higher the level of excitation of bodily energy. At this time, the energy structure will be cleared of foreign contacts, and there will be a stop of the internal dialogue.
And after stopping the internal dialogue, will it be necessary to increase the level of subtle energy?
Stephen, a stocky middle-aged man, clarified in a serious and thorough tone.
That's right. The second stage is breath-holding. Here we concentrate our energy, accumulate it, so that it would be enough to transmit a thought. And the third stage is the direct transmission or perception of the thought.
Teacher, are we going to read each other's thoughts?
Wayne asked, and his question aroused everyone's interest. The students turned their ears to hear the sage's answer.
In general, it is possible to transmit and read thoughts even at a distance. When you have sufficiently developed your telepathic abilities, you can practice it. But for the first time, we will try to work in pairs. One person in the pair will broadcast the thought, the other will perceive it. And since you will both be prepared with breathing practices, your energy channels will be open. This way, you can better attune to each other. Agree in advance who will transmit and who will receive the thought.
And how to properly tune in if we want to transmit a thought?
Asked Kelly.
If you transmit a thought to a person at a distance, you must first tune in to it. Clearly visualize the image of this person. Remember your emotions towards this person. Then, to present the thought in the form of a vivid image, which is colored with emotions.
And what if we convey the thought to the person who is next to us?
Then just look him in the eye. Look at each other. The one who is transmitting a thought should visualize the thought as imaginatively and volumetrically as possible. If it is a fruit, for example, you can imagine what it smells like, what it tastes like. If it is an action, think about how your partner in the exercise does it and how it pleases both him and you. It is important that this thought be emotionally colored.
And if I perceive the thought?
Maria decided to clarify.
Then what is the best way to tune in?
In this case, you must keep your energy channel clear so that your inner dialogue does not disrupt your partner's attunement. Try to disconnect from everything. Stop the internal dialogue and tune in only to the perception.
Encouraged by the upcoming experience, the students broke into pairs and stood opposite each other, talking animatedly. The sage gave them some time, occasionally glancing off into the distance, where the sun was rising in the dawn haze between the lilac mountain peaks.
Master, won't we need a mat?
Anna asked suddenly.
It is not necessary,
the master reassured her.
You can do cleansing, breath sitting, or standing. But it is better to hold the breath lying down and on exhalation, so that there is no free energy left in the lungs. But today, we will also do this delay standing opposite each other. It is not necessary to overstrain yourself in this exercise. To concentrate the power to transmit the thought, it will be enough two or three extreme delays of breath on exhalation. Concentrate on your sensations.
The sage glanced once more at the students, who had been divided into pairs and were concentrating on each other. Their hair fluttered in the light breeze of the fresh mountain wind. Despite the morning chill and dew, many of the students had taken off their shoes and stood barefoot on the fluffy carpet of grass to better feel the energy of this wonderful place.
Take a short inhalation with your mouth and a sharp exhalation also through your mouth.
Began the sage, and his voice sounded a little different than just a few seconds ago. It became more voluminous and deep, filling the surrounding space with vibrating waves.
And again a short inhalation and a sharp exhalation, without pauses.
The master showed how to breathe correctly, quickly, rhythmically, and sharply, inhaling and exhaling the air by thrusting through the mouth.
Help yourself with your hands. With your whole body.
The disciples began to breathe as the wise man showed them, and he continued in a measured manner.
The energy from the outside is concentrated in the chest area, and from there it goes downward and then upward. Inhalation from the chest down to the limbs, and exhalation upwards to the internal organs, and back again. You feel the energy in you. Feel how the breath connects with its flows. The energy of the body synchronizes with the rhythm of breathing and begins to change its movement quickly. Put your legs wide, slightly relax your knees, lean forward with your hands on them, leaning forward. This pose will help keep you from falling over from dizziness.
The students focused on the sensations, They breathed quickly and sharply, clearing the mind and getting rid of the inner dialogue, controlling their subtle energy. They looked spiritualized. Their hair, waving in the wind, was illuminated by the golden rays of the sun, and many of them had a blush on their cheeks. Their gazes became detached. It was as if they were not here, but at the same time, everywhere, traveling in the streams of subtle energies. The sage watched the disciples, and when he realized that they had already purified themselves and accumulated enough energy, he said,
"When exhaling, hold your breath so that there is no free energy left in your lungs. Lower your head on your chest, pull in your abdomen, clench the muscles of your anus and genitals."
The voice of the keeper of knowledge filled the whole space again. Now, for the students, it was the only thing that existed in this world. A cosmic, measured, vibrating voice. It sounded in the heads of the students and encouraged them to follow him.
"Feel the energy accumulating in the solar plexus area. Now inhale. Feel how consciousness covers all parts of the body, penetrates into the smallest cells. You relax. Feel how energy flows freely through the body. All clamps and blocks are removed. All obscurations disappear. Take a breath in and a breath out."
Students inhale after holding their breath, concentrating on their sensations and redistributing energy inside the body.
"Now hold your breath again on the exhale, as long as you can. You feel the energy accumulating, concentrating inside you."
The disciples did the breath holding again and again, trusting the master completely. Their faces smoothed out. They had an expression of boundless freedom. They were happy without the flow of constant thoughts, programs, and attitudes imposed by someone, labels and templates, doubts and fears.
"On a deep inhalation, your hands go upwards through the sides."
The keeper of knowledge spoke measuredly, surrounding the students with low chest vibrations.
"Lowering your hands, you make a long, strong exhalation through compressed lips, extremely tensing the muscles of the abdomen, chest, shoulder, girdle, slowly lowering your hands down. Look into each other's eyes, into the depth, into the very center of your soul. If you transmit a thought, visualize its image, feel the emotions it evokes in you, what feelings it should evoke in a person. Present it in the form of a vivid image. Let it be something pleasant. Imagine how a person performs some action or holds a necessary object in his hands, and he likes it."
The students standing opposite each other stared intently into each other's eyes. One of them was transmitting a thought. The other was perceiving it, having completely cleared the mind of all the usual husks of the chaotic flow of internal dialogue.
"Take a deep breath again."
The voice of the sage sounded again.
"Feel how energy, together with air, goes upwards through the body. But in the throat chakra, it is intercepted and is not released through the mouth, but goes concentrated in the head. Concentrate on the thought you want to convey. Look into each other's eyes. Keep breathing deeply. Concentrate on that thought. Breathe in and out again."
The keeper of knowledge led the students with his voice, and they raised their hands, inhaling deeply and exhaling in a long, measured breath, tensing their muscles and concentrating on the thought image they were going to convey. They did about 10 such breathing cycles and froze, continuing to stand opposite each other and transmit the images through their eyes. The sage saw how their energy shells shone, how freely the energy flowed in them. He felt that right now his followers were touching subtle matters, trying to transmit and perceive information through an unfamiliar channel, bypassing words, even bypassing gestures and facial expressions, using subtle material channels of energy, and stopping the inner dialogue. When the meditation was over and the students began to gradually come to their senses, the eyes of many of them shone with genuine delight. They met their eyes again with their exercise partner and smiled broadly, as if they alone knew some secret. As if they had experienced an exciting adventure together. Gradually, the clearing was filled with the excited hum of voices. The students were sharing their sensations with each other, checking whether they managed to transmit, feel, perceive the thought images correctly.
"I really wanted to swim in the mountain river,"
said a tall, broad-shouldered student named Alexander, looking at Maria half-questioningly.
"And I even saw myself entering the water and starting to swim. Right? Is that what you were trying to convey?"
Maria's face lit up with childishly direct delight and wrinkles in the corners of her eyes.
"Yes, yes. Did it really work?"
Maria looked at her practice partner with slight disbelief.
"Did you really manage to see it? I imagined how you enter this river, how clear and clean the water is, how it glistens in the sun. I imagined how cold it is, and how it invigorates your body, how you like to swim."
"It seems to have worked."
Alexander smiled broadly.
"And I'm not too sure, but I think you made a wish for something, a food, something tasty, some kind of dessert?"
Kelly asked, looking at her practice partner, Tiana.
"Yes, that's right."
The woman's eyes lit up with happy sparks.
"I imagined you eating popsicles, how pleasantly sour and refreshing they were."
"Oh, I think I even felt some of that minty flavor in my mouth."
Tiana laughed, adjusting her bandana. The student was glowing so brightly that she seemed like a young girl, not an elderly lady. She felt lightness and a soaring elation at the spiritual experience she was having. Many other disciples were in a similar state. There was an atmosphere of high spirits and light joy around the sage. But there were also those who failed, and among them was a young student named Wayne, who wanted to master telepathy more than anyone else. Now, he looked upset.
"The great master, why did we fail?"
Wayne turned to the sage.
"I tried to concentrate and imagined him doing a simple action, clapping his hands. But I didn't see anything, even though I was also trying. Tuning in."
The tall, thin guy with glasses waved his hands with a guilty look.
"It's normal that it didn't work the first time,"
answered the keeper of knowledge, sending encouraging glances to the students.
"It could be because your mind wasn't receptive and open enough."
The sage nodded towards the guy with the glasses.
"Or because you, Wayne, couldn't get enough energy to broadcast your thoughts, so your energy flow was interrupted. Or one of you had extraneous thoughts, which clogged the channel of perception. Or maybe both."
"Yes, I realized at one point that I was having an internal dialogue,"
Wayne admitted.
"But it's so difficult to get rid of it completely."
"So it is necessary to practice more."
"Teacher, if I do this kata regularly..."
Wayne raised his head and looked into the eyes of the sage with sincere hope.
"Then will I start to succeed?"
The keeper of knowledge gave the young student a warm look of support, sending him the energy of light, acceptance, and unconditional love.
"It is necessary not only to do this kata, but also to follow the spiritual path in general,"
he answered.
"To keep your energy channels clean, not to pollute your physical body with slags and toxins."
"And this also affects..."
Wayne was surprised.
"Of course,"
smiled the sage.
"You need to control your nutrition, so that your body receives simple, healthy food. Do not use alcohol, fatty food, fast food. But it is also important not to pollute yourself with negative emotions, because being in negative emotions, it is hard for a person to be in a good state. It is hard to develop the will, to concentrate, to purify the consciousness."
"Great Master, tell me, is it possible to develop telepathy so that you can transmit thoughts to several people at once?"
Stephen asked.
"It is possible."
The teacher nodded.
"With long practice, it is possible to spread telepathic influence over a group of people. The main thing is to keep your mind clear. Then you will easily perceive other people's thoughts, and to train your will to focus your attention and broadcast your thoughts to others. Both require constant spiritual practice. To develop superpowers is really possible if you practice regularly and advance on the spiritual path.
The sun was gradually rising from behind the horizon, and the disciples discussed their experience for a long time, asked the sage questions, and shared their impressions with each other. Today they have managed to make one more step towards God and to realize the limitlessness of the possibilities of a person who constantly makes spiritual efforts.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.